Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Sandy Smith, and she is the CEO of Smith Publicity, helping authors with their book marketing and promotion. She studied architecture and now promotes books. Not exactly a straight line. So let's find out how she came to her line of work, the ways in which public speaking has benefited her, and everything in between. Welcome to Teach the Geek Interview, Sandy.
Thank you, Neil. So happy to be here.
Wonderful. So, I mean, I did mention that you studied architecture. So what was the motivation to do that?
I love buildings, especially residential buildings, and envisioning homes for people and transforming, I don't know, their day-to-day life into something that is a warm and happy, a huge part of their life. And so Even today, even though I'm not doing that, I would say every single day, I am still looking at architect plans, architect journals. It's still in me, but I don't do that every day. Now it's more of a passion than a source of income.
Before you started Smith Publicity, what type of work did you do?
Well, I started off at an architect firm in Boston right near Boston Garden. I'm not even sure what the new name of Boston Garden is today. It's where the Celtics play. And what we did there was a lot of commercial work for restaurants and other buildings. And so I kind of got my foot in the door in the professional services world there. And from that kind of love of the design more than the kind of the math side of architecture, I really fell in love with, building a space. So that transition to computer graphics, again, this was in the late 80s. So that was a brand new and exciting field of computer graphics. And so then I transitioned from kind of the architecture more to the computer graphics side. And I worked after the architect firm, I worked for a startup company called Advanced Computer Graphics. And they were right next to, interesting, Fenway Park. So I went from the Celtics to the Red Sox. And I worked there doing we were beta testing software, we're beta testing equipment in the graphics world. And that's when people were switching from traditional printing to going from a design on a screen on your computer to printing out. It's called a Linotype machine. And then they would give the films. That's what we did, was create the films, the printing presses. It was brand new. Again, this is in the 80s. So I went kind of from the architect, switched over to computer graphics. And then from there, I really loved connecting people from the idea of a company to then communicating it to the target audience and really understanding the marketing. One of our clients was Reebok. We designed all the collateral for the Pump sneaker. Neil, I don't know if you remember the Pump.
Of course, I remember the Pump.
That was a big deal then. So that kind of mind of kind of the architect, the science behind that, was able to translate to, different as you're young and your career is starting to grow, to take advantage of what you're learning, see what you like, and then latch onto that and explore it a little further. So after that, from architecture to computer graphics, I ended up in marketing communications. It was not near another Boston sports team, but with one of the Thomson Reuters companies, and I was working in intellectual property there, doing a lot of trademark and copyright research work, but in the marketing and communications side of it. So that was kind of my transition in my early career there. And with the marketing communications, I did a lot of brochures, early website design, translating pretty technical legal information into a digestible information about intellectual property that marketing people especially had to understand as they were trademarking their new drug at a pharmaceutical company, for example. So trying to kind of a little bit what you do, Neil, is trying to help people translate something that's pretty complex into something like, ah, I get it, and this is why we need your services type of thing. So that was something I did at that point in my career. And then to jump to where I am today, I did take some time off of my career when I had my two children. I was able to pause, and my children's dad, he helped design the Acela high-speed train, and that moved us from Boston to the Philadelphia area back in the mid-90s. So that was kind of fun. I was on the outside of that process, of course, but seeing the technology of this high-speed train was hopefully going to do for the United States transportation. But I stayed home with my kids, did a little bit of consulting. But back then, as people might remember, having a flexible career and children wasn't as encouraged or as easy. It's never easy, but as encouraged as it is today. But when I was ready to get back into the workforce, I always loved books, a big part of my life. I saw a job posting for what's called a book publicist. And I'm like, what in the world is that? So I had a marketing background, a publicity background, loved books, and took a shot and started out brand new in the world of book publicity because no one tells you. There's no job as being a book publicist in school. So you're just kind of bringing along all the talents that you've learned from other people and what you're passionate about doing, and started in this new role here at, as a book publicist, and then continue to grow from there.
Wow. Okay. Architecture, the computer graphics, to marketing, and to stay-at-home mom, to then book publicist. You've lived a few lives. That's wonderful.
A few lives. And Neil, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And maybe you can give me some advice on that. What's next?
I help people with the technical presentations. I don't know if I should be a career coach. We all gotta know our lanes,
I'm
man.
open to ideas.
You've got all these different jobs. I got one, you know what I'm
Well,
saying?
you know what? Now we're also in my family. We own fairly new to us about 26 chickens. So how's that for another career shift? I will not be doing that full time, taking care of our chickens.
All right.
I'll leave that to others.
All right. So when it comes to being the CEO of Smith Publicity, what does that entail?
It entails a couple of different paths. One is to understand our ideal client, which is usually authors, sometimes publishers hiring us to help their authors. But it's understanding how to help this author build visibility for their book and their ideas. And here's a big secret. When we're doing book publicity, there's only a very small percent of our job that we're actually publicizing a book. And the reason for that is because there are thousands of books that come out in the United States every day, thousands. And so the news of a new book is not very exciting. It's not newsworthy. What is newsworthy is what is the author saying? How are they helping the world, whether it's a fiction book through a new voice? We work with many nonfiction authors, and how are they trying to help the world? What is it, the problems that they're trying to solve? How are they trying to inform, entertain, delight, problem solve? That's what we have to focus on, is what is meaningful to that author, and then find a way to build their voice out there, get their book out there. So we're really promoting them, and their book comes along for the ride. Oftentimes they're speakers. They want to speak on their topic because it's a wonderful way to help. It goes from helping one person, maybe in a consultation, to helping many people. And many of our authors have a goal of, I want to help more people. So they write a book and they speak, and it's a wonderful way to be part of that. So a big part of my job is listening to our authors, understanding and helping them with a plan to meet their goals and their ideal people they want to help. And then building our team here and understanding the tools and the techniques to build discoverability for a book and an authority, a thought leader in whatever space they're in.
Do you work with certain types of authors? And if so, what types of authors are those?
We work with most types of authors, but we always say we don't work with poetry, although we have worked with poetry books in the past. Typically, we're working with our biggest is nonfiction authors, because they often have a bigger marketing plan for their book, because the book can be part of their brand, part of their business card, part of their personal branding. So whether they're leadership experts or personal finance, marketing, HR, leadership and development, we work with a lot of authors in that space, but also lifestyle authors. And whether they're in health and wellness, there's a lot of relationship, brain health, nutrition, self-help. We work with those authors as well, and memoirs. So, pretty much every genre, fiction, of course, children's books we love as well, but probably the one genre we don't work with is fiction, but we do cookbooks. We'll do academic books if there's enough of a mainstream need for the book. So more so than the genre, we're really talking with the author about their goals and if we're a good fit to find a media strategy to help them with building their brand and building awareness about their ideas in their book. So we love pretty much every genre.
Okay. Well, I guess when it comes to the people that work with you, how do you gauge whether the collaboration has been successful?
That's a great question, Neil, because in our job, and I'm not saying just we at Smith Publicity, but we as publicists or peer professionals across the board, we can do everything right in terms of we got the great messaging. We've got the best client who's got great things to say. We have a beautiful media list that is highly tailored and exactly the person who should be interested in this topic. We can do everything right and see no results, because the media, it's up to them who they're going to interview, who they're going to do a book review, who they're going to feature in some way on their podcast, for example. So it's a really hard job, because at the end of the day, we can't guarantee what we're doing. But we guarantee is that we won't take you on if we don't think we can help you. And we guarantee that you're going to have some brain power and strategy and talent and an intent to do a great job. So how we look at success is on the quantity and the quality of the media response. But in a bigger way, we also look at what we can control. Did we communicate with you? Did we brainstorm with you? Did we give you updates as promised? Did you feel like we were, had your best interest at heart? Did we feel like a true collaborator and partner? And that's a way, and we do this through regular written updates and through regular scheduled Zoom calls, so that our clients always know what we're doing, and we're building trust, we're building camaraderie, and supporting one another. We can't do it without their knowledge and their passion. So how we measure success is, yes, through media placements that we get. Again, a great podcast interview, a feature in an industry publication, or a book review that's really powerful. But also too, it's the relationships and the trust that we've built that is a true measure of success. And we see this through authors coming back to us with their second, third, fourth, and fifth book. So that's when we know we're doing something right.
Okay. So for the people who are listening or watching this conversation, Sandy, and they want to, or they aspire to run their own company one day, what should they do to prepare for such an endeavor?
Get a thick skin. It's a tough, and I just went to a leadership conference last week for one of our clients who was beta testing a leadership program and wanted me to go through it. And what he said to me personally was I needed to research leadership skills for empaths because I have a lot of feelings, just ask my husband. And so what happens, you have to have a tougher skin because I do tend to think about work, especially when I'm going to bed. And I, when you have a team that's depending on you for their family's finances, paying their mortgage, paying their kids' dance bills, or buying food, the pressure that you have to take it so seriously. You have to be ready for it because it is all encompassing. At least to me. So that would be something I would warn people about. And when I talk to my friends who don't own a business and don't have a business, they will say to me they didn't realize sometimes the pressure or the different perspective that everyone has stress in their job. And I'm not saying that it's more stressful to be start your own business, but there's different kinds of pressures, especially when you care. So just be prepared for that, because when you hire people, you might have to let them go, and that's really hard. Or you might grow really fast and then have to scale back, and that's really hard when you really care deeply about your team. So having a bit of a thick skin, getting financial advisors right away so they can help you make decisions based not just on based on facts. And finances, I would say that's important. But besides a thick skin, to get a good, and there's fractional CFOs out there, and you can look for them in your industry, and they can be a huge asset to say, is it me, or is this a good decision that I'm making?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Sandy. When it comes to running your own thing and having people depend on you for their livelihood, it's so easy to be an employee somewhere. And you don't even have to think about where the money comes from. It just ends up in your bank account every other week or whenever the pay period is. But when you're the person responsible Right. for making sure that money ends up in people's bank accounts every other week, that's a whole different type of pressure. And you're absolutely Yeah. right. Those financial advisors surely come in handy for that, I'm sure. You know, Sandy, when Yeah. I first put this when I first put this podcast and YouTube channel together, it was about my own struggles giving presentations in front of others and me getting better at it because I saw the benefit of doing so just as a technical person, having to talk to non-technical people in a lot of cases. Just it was terrible, but I got better at it over time. But when it comes to you giving presentations or public speaking generally, is that something you've always been good at? And if not, what did you do to get better at it?
I never felt that I was good at it naturally, although there's some people I understand are, and I'm sure you've heard this statistic that people fear public speaking more than they fear death. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I don't get that. I like living. I'll give a presentation any day before ending up in a coffin. But yeah, I've definitely heard that.
I remember the first time I had to give a speech in front of a company. I was, I think, all of 23 years old, and it was 350 people. And my boss, Art Medici, if you're listening, he was fantastic. He put me out there and said, "Present the company's marketing plan to the, to the everybody." And I'll tell you, Neil, two nights before, I could not sleep. I was so nervous. The night before, I couldn't sleep. I was so nervous. I couldn't eat breakfast the day of. And then when I did it, I don't know how well I did it, but I did it. I felt like I had superhuman powers. Like I got through it. I saw some people nodding along and seemingly giving good advice and or good information. And I felt so on a high after, because I kind of conquered a huge fear, that 6 months later, I had to do it again. And I only got scared the night before. 6 months later, the next time I did it, I only had that pit in my stomach the morning of. The next time I did it, I only had it, that jitter, maybe an hour before. So bottom line is just practice. And was my key of overcoming that terrified feeling of getting up and speaking in front of groups. And I do it more so now to strangers and not within the company, because our company's really small. There's 31 of us right now. But when I go out to different industry events and I do have the opportunity to speak, it's still something that still causes me a bit of angst, but it's the practice and understanding that what I'm saying is helping people and giving them good information, that it kind of takes that pressure away, or kind of going back to having a conversation with one person and feeling like I'm talking to someone one-on-one, even though it might be a big room. That's helped me as well, kind of get rid of those jitters.
All right. And then when it comes to presentations that you give in front of people, Sandy, do you have a process for putting those presentations together? And if so, what is it?
Yes, I really start off with target audience. What do they want to hear from me? When I leave the stage, the podium, the meeting, what do I want them to know about the information and about me? And I reverse engineer that backwards so that I make sure that I'm covering not too much information, but you know, it kind of goes back to that framework of what do I want them to walk away knowing? And is this part of my presentation supporting that? And so I work backwards in that way. And sometimes there's visual presentation, for, you know, slides and assets, and other times there's not. But you can't also underestimate the value of practice. You don't want to just wing it ever. People are, you know, their time is valuable. You don't want to wing anything. So practicing the pauses is important. Power in those pauses for sure. But understanding the ideal or the variety of the target audience there, what do they hope to get from me? Building it a thoughtful, intentional line of information. And then practicing so that there's no glitches, that I am going as smoothly as possible through the information. And that having that preparation decreases my stress before getting up in front of a group.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of what you do, Sandy. I do the same thing, kind of figure out what you need to impart to the people, and then you work backwards to figure out what you need to say to impart that thing to those people. I get the sense that a lot of times people will open up PowerPoint and start putting things onto slides. I was just at a conference recently, and so many of those presentations were people reading slides. And I just remember thinking to myself,
yeah,
I can read too, and I probably could read just as well as you. So you reading is not really helping me. It's like, this reminds me of back when I was a kid, and my parents used to read me bedtime stories before I went to sleep. You know, like I could read the book, you could read the book, we could read. That's great. So how about you present something that maybe is not in the slides, maybe something that I couldn't necessarily just read along to. That could be much helpful, more helpful than us just reading together. It's public speaking, not public reading.
Right. And yes, slides should be, if you're using them, and my opinion, should be support and not kind of guide and give a visual of maybe the energy or the overall direction. Or it can, of course, showcase graphs and charts visually if that's in reinforcing your points. But no, you shouldn't be reading from your script. It is not really enhancing the learning experience. I agree.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I attend a lot of technical presentations, and a lot of times I get the sense, especially if they're more academic in nature, people are doing those presentations based on them being able to say that they presented at that particular event, as opposed to let me do a presentation that is actually effective and people listen to, and ones where people aren't thinking, what am I going to have for lunch? Like I do sometimes.
Well, I'm always thinking about food for sure. But it's going back to exactly what you said, Neil, serving your audience. And that's what your goal should be as a speaker. And you know, they're gifting you with their time, and you want to make sure you're honoring it with giving them insightful, informational, impactful, whatever it is, inspirational information, rather than just getting through it for the sake, as you said, of checking it off a to-do list. Went to this conference, presented, now I can add it to my resume or my LinkedIn profile, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm also a fan of what you said about practicing and just not winging it. Because oftentimes when people wing it, the information comes out as it comes out. And it might not come out in the best way that could be understandable to the people that you're speaking to. And I figure if you're going to practice, then you can actually practice being able to speak to whatever you're talking about, as opposed to reading your slides. You don't need to practice reading. I figure you could read already. You should get up there and read.
Right. And when you can practice for the length, you can practice for the flow of information. It is, you know, even when you're typing it out, it sounds great until you start speaking it. And then you're going to see that it doesn't really flow as nicely as you thought. And I have to move my arms because I haven't moved. And so, sorry about that. Nice technology here. If I'm not here, the light's dim. But yes, you don't, and people, I think, can tend to wing it. Like, I know this information off the back of my hand. I don't need to prepare. But I think, especially in your field, Neil, being able to take a concept and present it in a way that is digestible and understandable, so that, again, what do you want people to walk away with after hearing you speak? What are the emotions in there? What is the nuggets of knowledge? What do you want them to know and feel about you? And then behind that, is it your company, your product, your service, your expertise? And being intentional about that, as opposed to like, oh, I do this every day, I'll figure it out. It doesn't translate well.
Yeah, and I certainly take your point about the timing as well, Sandy. The conference I went to recently had a portion where there were poster presentations. But before the poster presentations, they had what were called lightning talks. So a number of people who were giving those who had those poster presentations could come up to the microphone and speak for a minute about their, basically giving people a pitch as to why they should come to their, see their poster. And they had a minute to do it. And I started timing some people. And would you know that some people went over a minute? And I just remember thinking to myself, this could have been, you could have practiced this. I mean, there's so much that people just get up there and just, this didn't need to be said. Like, your name, and then what school that you're coming from. Well, I can see on the screen, it's right on the screen, your name and where you're coming from. So you might be able to skip that part and just get straight to the point. Why should I come to your poster? And it's just, it annoyed the hell out of me. So I just stopped listening after a while. I was like, you know what? You're wasting my time. You could have practiced this. It's disrespectful in my mind to the audience when you don't stick to time. And I'm just such a stickler for that kind of thing.
I'm a rule follower. It's disrespectful to the people organizing the event, the people who are coming after you, and Neil, to the people who want lunch, who are waiting for their lunch break.
Oh, 100%. Oh my God, you don't even know. Especially when these kind of things happen before lunch. Are you kidding me? It happened before the coffee break. And my stomach was already rumbling. It's like, come on, man. You're keeping me from coffee and brownies. I want brownies.
I love brownies. And that's an interesting point that you said, Neil. And I've been to some public speaking classes and courses and read books. And we work with our authors to try to, the ones who are really professional speakers and want to be professional speakers. I'm now going to turn the table on you because you brought up such an interesting point. The first line that you say is so impactful, right, to the whole flavor. And you don't want to waste time introducing yourself or something obvious, right? You want to capture their attention. What do you tell people who are speaking how to make that dynamic entrance?
Let me tell you a story. No, that's the line. Let me tell you a story.
And here I was, like, ready to dive in and listen to it. You got me. You proved your point. Like, yeah, what is it?
So many people, they get up, you know what, Sandy? So many people get up there and they say, oh, thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here. And all this other, man, great. You're glad to be here. Tell me something, man.
I'm gonna write that down. Let me tell you a story.
Yeah, I use it all the time. And yeah, people, okay, tell me the story. And then I hit them with the story, you know?
That was brilliant. I was like sitting in my chair, like, okay, who doesn't love a good story?
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're going to learn. I mean, that's quite frankly how I love to learn history, is through a good novel, through a story. So stories, and then the art of storytelling is such a big, we've done a lot of authors who on the art of storytelling, getting your ideas, your thoughts, your influence out through the power of a story. So translating that into your world, the power of a story through public speaking, especially a story on very technical information. It's going to be a wonderful way to take in new knowledge.
100%. This has been a great conversation, Sandy. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
Through LinkedIn, and because there's a lot of Sandy Poriers out there, Sandy Poirier Smith, as you can find me on LinkedIn, or at Smith Publicity, which is smithpublicity.com. Welcome to connect and answer any questions or learn about your expertise as well. So thank you for having me, Neil. This was fun.
Wonderful.
Now I feel like I need a story, though, but that's okay.
Yeah,
and a brownie. I need a story and a brownie.
Indeed. Well, this has been a great, well, again, everyone, this marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, Neil.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms. Or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.